Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg and Tim Rogers. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks very much, Fred. It's good to be back.
Yeah, you've been really, really busy. I understand you're teaching at two different universities and you finally got a break.
Yeah, it was a very busy semester. I probably bit off more than I could chew, but that's typical.
Yeah, well, and it sounds like, you know, we were chatting a little bit offline. It sounds like you've had fun and some good students. I think it gives you a chance to think deeper about how do you transfer this knowledge and all that good stuff. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I want to pick your brain a little bit is that, you're the for our Speaking of Reliability cast, basically, you've got the most experience and most depth in the supply chain side of things. Mm-hmm. And a couple of the other guys in recent podcasts used the Samsung recall with their, I think Dilbert's doing a spoof on it now with their exploding phones.
The Galaxy Note.
That's right. Right. Yeah. And so it's, and I don't know the details, and I don't suspect you do either, and we may never know it, but it's one of those cases where, and it's not the only time that this has happened, is where a supplied part or a supplied subsystem to your product fails, right? And if my Toyota car has a failure, I really don't care which tier one supplier provide the powertrain or the nav system or whatever. And it was probably not Toyota directly, but I'm going to take it back to Toyota.
Sure. You're going to hold them responsible.
That's right. And so all of these phone things is the recall is really, I've heard numbers in the billions of dollars that they lost on the recall itself.
Just in the recall, but who knows what effect it's going to have on their brand long-term.
That's right. That's right. And so but that was the supplied part. Let's make the assumption that because we've talked about it before, is that, well, what happens when a part, you get some bad parts, right? And you have a yield issue or your field failure rate's a little bit higher and you're doing failure analysis, you're doing, all those kinds of things. But now let's say it really hits the fan, right? You're doing a Samsung Galaxy Note 7.
Right.
Reach size recall, billion-dollar recall.
Class issue.
Yeah. My first thought was, they must have the lawyers involved. But I don't know if that's the only solution.
Yeah. I know we've talked about this before, Fred, but, falling back on legal remedies, that's always an option. But I think you first got to ask yourself, what is your relationship with this supplier? Mm-hmm. Is this – how important is this supplier to your long-term business success?
Is this Samsung's still going to need batteries? So
yeah, exactly. Have you had a fairly good low-cost relationship with this supplier in the past? And what I mean by low cost is low cost to manage the relationship, not necessarily low cost in the stuff that you're buying. But has this supplier been easy to manage? Have they been easy to work with? Have they been generally reliable in the past? And if so, then it's probably a good idea for you to try to work with the supplier to understand what the issues are and work together on root cause and figure out the best way to get both of you out of this mess. Mm-hmm. If you've got a good relationship with the supplier, they should feel as bad about this as you do.
That's right.
This is supposed to be a partnership. Maybe they've let you down. Now, I want to back up here for a second. We're operating under the assumption that it's the supplier's fault. And of course, I think we've talked about this also. It's not necessarily the case. The supplier may have done exactly what you asked them to do, and the problem might be in the design rather than in the supplier's execution of the design in manufacturing. So regardless, it's worth it to both of you to work together to figure out what the root cause is and understand if it's an engineering problem or if it's a different kind of problem. I think you're right. I don't think we're ever going to really know exactly what happened at Samsung. They're going to be pretty secretive about whatever analysis that they do internally. But it's hard not to look at this case as a situation where Samsung rushed a product to market, in part because they were trying to beat Apple. They mm-hmm. knew that Apple was coming out with a new phone in October, November, and I think this product may have been rushed to market. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, well, again, is it really the supplier's fault in that situation? Or was everybody pressed on the product development side to hit an unrealistic market release date?
That's right.
So, well, part of it, I think that idea, though, that it's depended on your relationship. Now, if it's a strict, here's the drawing, make it exactly like this, you know, right. and it's micromanaged and oversaw all the way through, it stays with Samsung, right? If they take on the ownership for the design, for the nuances, the qualification, here's
good point.
All those things, then they've taken on all that liability. They are just hiring hands to manipulate the materials.
Right.
Whereas if on the other hand, extreme is Samsung says, hey, you're the battery expert. Here's the enclosure we want you in. You design it, you create it, you manufacture it, you qualify it, and just let us know that you're okay.
Right.
Right. And they abdicated it completely. They're completely trusting their supplier to get it right. I suspect most companies, most organizations are somewhere in between. You know, it's you've got expertise in this area, but we want to know more about it. Here's where right. what's the risk. Here's what we saw that didn't quite work. What are you doing about it? It's more give and take. And in the best circumstances, you're both on the same side of the table working it together.
Yeah.
It's just an extension of your own team.
What we used to call co-engineering.
Yeah. That's right. And so I think it starts with that. And then it's I agree with you that it's probably in both parties' interest to solve it. And there's plenty of blame to go around, but that's not going to help.
Well, Fred, I think you told me a story a while ago about a situation at HP where I can't remember the details, where you were basically looking for, I think it was a humidity sensor, if I remember right.
That's right.
You were asking a supplier to do something. I mean, they had expertise in humidity sensors, but they had never produced something for that specific application.
Or that
so
small.
It was,
that was
it
the was, issue. Is they were putting them in HVAC systems, so they were these, you know, 2 inches by an inch size module, and we're putting them in an inkjet printer. And we said, can you make it the size of a thumbnail?
Yeah.
No.
they understand their technology, but you as the customer might be asking them to apply their expertise, their technical expertise, in a completely, you know, different area. I don't think that's what happened in the Samsung case, but it is something to think about when you have a problem, a field failure of some kind. Mm-hmm. You were relying on the expertise of your supplier, but did your supplier, were they, you know, being pushed to implement their technology in a previously unproven environment?
That's a good point. Yeah, I'm thinking of the Boeing case with their batteries in their grounding their fleet a year ago or more. Now, where it makes me wonder, was that a completely different environment or form factor? Again, it's one of those that I think we have more information on, but it's one that. That's what made me think of that. Your thoughts of the new environment going to it.
So again, you're relying. You come back to your point. You're relying on the supplier because they have expertise with a particular technology, say battery technology. But has anybody tried to use that technology in this particular environment or this kind of application, this kind of field service environment? In that case, there's a risk. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but that could be the reason why things didn't work out the way they were hoping. You know?
They were hoping for it. Yeah. Sell a million more of them.
Right.
It's Well, what would you do for the first phone call? You've come to the realization that, oh, the supplier that you're working with is, there's something wrong, and we're not sure if it's our design, if it's their part, we need to alert them. There's an issue before it gets into the news. Like, I'm thinking of the Takata airbag thing.
No kidding. Another big disaster.
That's right.
Well, you've got to let them know. And of course, if you have done some of your own root cause analysis and you think you have isolated the issue to something that's supplied by that company, then you have to let them know. I mean, you have to give them a chance to make it right, or to work with you to try to verify the root cause or come up with a reasonable alternative. Mm-hmm. So it's not a fun phone call to make, but you need their cooperation. You need their assistance. You need to figure out ultimately whether it's a design problem. And I don't mean just the design of the thing that you're buying, but a system level design problem.
That's right.
Or if it's a problem in workmanship, or if it's a problem with your supplier's supplier. Regardless, they need to be part of that discussion, part of that conversation. And it doesn't have to be accusatory. You know, it doesn't have to be prosecutorial. Mm-hmm. You could just say, look, this is a problem that we're having. We want you to participate in our root cause analysis. You want to avoid a lot of finger pointing at the beginning because you just don't know.
That's right.
You may not have enough information to be able to assign blame at that point. You want to give the supplier an opportunity.
Well, ideally that occurs before you know you've got a recall, right?
Well, yeah.
Now, some circumstances that happens pretty quickly. But let's say they got a couple of incidents and they go, what's going on with that? We should understand that. We shouldn't have things catching fire. But I'm quite sure one of the first questions was, well, is this a batch issue? Is this a defective manufacturing process? You know, is this limited or not? And later, I guess they found out they couldn't tell. So they did
a more
major recall.
Well, they thought they had contained, right? And then they thought they had, they were doing recalls, they were replacing the batteries, they were sending them back to customers, and it turns out that it wasn't solving the problem after all. Apparently there were customers, I don't know if there were customers where their phones caught on fire twice, you know, but it sounds
right.
it sounds like there may have been. But this gets to the statistics of reliability a little bit, mm-hmm. Fred, right? How many incidents do you have to have before you declare a recall? Or, you know, at what point do you say, you know what, this is not just a bad batch, there's something else going on here?
Well, that's not just statistics, Tim. You know that. It's what was the painkiller, is it not Excedrin? It was a Tylenol. Remember Tylenol was contaminated or something?
Yeah, it was cyanide poisoning.
Right. And it was one case.
Yeah.
Right. And they recalled everything on the shelves.
Well, so now we're getting a little bit into the psychology of recalls. I like to talk about the Tylenol case. There was another case going on at the same time, which was the Audis. So, here's Tylenol. Some person was going into drugstores, opening up the bottles, putting in poison. So obviously this was not Tylenol's fault. I've forgotten who the parent company is. But their approach to this problem was to say, you know what? We're going to take them all off the shelf. We're going to take them all off the shelf. We're going to redesign our product. That's when they started putting that foil on top of the bottle. Mm-hmm. They took full responsibility. And around the same time, the Audi sudden acceleration problem. Do you remember that one? So people were going through the garage, and people said, I had my foot on the brake, and instead the cars were accelerating right through the garage.
Oh, I remember this.
And Audi came back and said, well, you're pushing the accelerator with your foot instead of the brake. You think you're pressing on the brake, but actually you're pressing the accelerator. They decided to blame the drivers. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know enough about how accelerators and brakes are connected together, but
they're not.
And so they lost a lot of market share because of that approach, because they kept insisting it was driver error.
Right. Which is independent of the fact that if your car's designed well, you don't have driver error.
Right.
right?
Well, exactly. That's a very good point.
It's always the designer's fault, Tim. You know that.
Of course. But this was, I remember when we were in Vancouver with HP, we had a problem with printed circuit boards. Mm-hmm. And the circuit boards came from a supplier in Taiwan. And I forgot what the problem was exactly, but we picked up the phone, we called the supplier in Taiwan, and they said, we are on a plane tonight to fly back to the U.S. to work side by side with you to figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. Hey, that's a pretty good supplier. That's a supplier relationship that I want to cultivate. Now, I realize we were HP. We were a big customer. Mm-hmm, they wanted to make a strong impression. I understand all of that. But contrast that with a different supplier that I had a phone call with in a different part of the world who said, well, we only built what you told us to build.
We've never had that problem before. It must be you.
This must be a problem with your design.
That's right.
Because our workmanship is superior. So it comes back to what you were saying before. You don't know. I mean, you believe the problem is because of a part that you obtained from this supplier. But if the relationship is worth it something to you because you've gotten good service from the supplier in the past, they have technology that you really need, your design engineers have a good working relationship with each other. Mm-hmm. You know, for all these reasons, it's worth it to you to just look at it like a technical problem that needs to be solved, not a deliberate attempt on the supplier's part to sabotage your business.
That's right. Yeah. And I think the first phone call is probably going to be more routine. Hey, we've got an issue. It looks like it's an emerging issue. We need to nail it and understand it.
We need your help.
That's right. And then I think though, at some point, and going back to your thought about how many failures does it take? There are statistics that look at that, and it's also related to the severity. So exploding exploding and catching fire and causing accidents and death. Those are all one is all it takes. Right. But let's say it just goes dead. The battery just fails completely and goes cold.
You have a brick.
Right. And is it a 2% of your population or 20% of your population? That becomes a business decision as to, well, how often do you replace it? And it ties into market share, it ties into to consequence. But it's more if it's a benign failure. It's almost none, like one event that causes a loss of life. But even then, Tesla, with their autonomous self-driving car, the car did not recognize a truck pulling out in front of them. And Tesla kind of took the middle road. They kind of said, it's not totally autonomous. You still have a brake and a steering wheel and we even have a built-in reminder to pay attention kind of thing. You're supposed to be paying attention.
Yeah. Good luck with that. I mean, autonomous cars create a whole class of weird issues. I don't know what.
Drones. What car insurance. Yeah, drones. Look at drones. Yeah. When they're autonomous and they're going to be everywhere.
Yeah. Apparently.
Yeah, the reliability world's getting interesting. I did a paper for a conference last year, and how do you set a reliability goal for a drone? A delivery drone.
Right.
And it's not just the mechanics, and how many can you afford to drop out of the sky and lose? It's all about perception and safety and perceived safety. And then the goals change dramatically when you start looking at the media's looking at this whole industry, and a single failure is going to be blown way out of proportion.
Sure. All it takes is for one of those drones to drop a package on somebody's head.
Right. Or on the other hand, I'm looking at, SpaceX, right? They've blown up how many rockets?
Yeah.
Right. And they're saying, it is a dangerous job. And, we clear the launch pad. Nobody's gotten hurt. But we've lost tens of millions of dollars in payloads. And that's part of the business. That's normal. and we're doing this and this and this to fix it. We're doing all these cases, you know, here's what we're doing to learn from that incident. Right. So it's industry dependent to a large degree.
I want to tie what you just said back to our issues about suppliers. You know, we talked before about how important it is to bring your supplier into your world a little bit. So helping them understand where the risks are, helping them understand what you perceive to be the biggest risks to your customers, and then, you know, talking about that from the standpoint of how do we design the product, how do we plan our testing and qualification in order to give ourselves some confidence that this is going to be okay. So, you know, again, educating your supplier, helping them understand what the end users are going to be doing, what the field service environment looks like, where the risks are, and being proactive. And unfortunately, things do happen. These are, you know, a lot of the systems we've been talking about are big and complex, and bad stuff's going to happen. So, but again, I'll come back to what I said before. If this is a supplier that you're interested in continuing a relationship, I wouldn't be too quick to jump on a threat of legal action.
That's right. It's probably and we've talked about it so many times, is it really starts early on as you start working with the supplier and the relationship you build. It's another one of the benefits of that is that when it is a major issue, is you want all of those relationships and working relationships in place and get to a resolution that works for both parties. Now, one last question for you, Tim. These major recalls, they're catastrophic when they happen to parties involved at all levels. Is that something that would go in the contract language? Is, you know, what happens then?
So companies will typically have standard terms and conditions in their purchase orders that describe things like warranties and damages. This is, again, something that you want to understand at the beginning of your relationship, whether it's a new supplier or whether you're buying something new and it's a critical component like a battery might, you know, is in many products. If you're buying, you know, an O-ring can be a critical component, right?
That's right. If we go back far enough.
So, you know, you need to be smart about it, but you want to take a look at your standard terms and conditions in your contracts, and you may need to add additional language to make sure that you're clear about what the responsibility of the supplier is in case of recalls or in case of customer returns. So. There is an implied warranty that goes with most purchase orders that has to do with fitness of use.
Right.
But that operates, there's an assumption that everybody understands what fitness of use means.
Right.
You know, like we talked about before, are you putting existing technology in a new and unproven environment? How much can the supplier warranty its use if no one has ever tried this before?
Well, and if you didn't tell them you're doing that with your
product, good point.
Right? You know,
good point.
That's at that point you can see where the lawyers start, you know, nibbling around the edges and wanting to get involved because you don't want to sit down in your first meeting with a new supplier saying, "All right, now when this gets recalled, you're going to pay for the whole thing, right?"
Right.
No.
But at the very least, I mean, you do want to make sure that you have confidence that they're going to stand with you and work with you and take, if necessary, to take some responsibility. There's always, you know, if supplier does not perform, you can always decide that you're not going to do business with them anymore.
Right.
That's always available as a course of action, but that may not be sufficient to make up, you know, to make up for your losses. Okay. So I wouldn't want to spend too much time on it. You know, we want to emphasize the positive more than the negative here.
Right.
But I think if it is a critical component and you think there is a greater than zero risk, a greater than zero probability that there could be a recall and it could be particularly damaging, then it's worth spending some time talking about what are the responsibilities in that situation, particularly if this is a supplier you've never worked with before.
That's right. Well, you know, I'm hoping, Tim, that you and I and all of our listeners never have to deal with a recall. It's just not a happy place all the way through. Nope. And if it does happen, it really is going to rely on the relationship you have in place already, which we should be doing anyway, is exactly. Building a strong partnerships with our suppliers. Exactly. And so let's turn it over to our listeners. You know, if any of you have actually gone through this scenario, we'd love to hear from you what your thoughts are on that. Take over to reliability.fm and leave a comment on the episode. I think we're going to be at number 182 for this one, if I read my notes right. And I'll have to do a little bit of a search to look at some of our earlier recordings, Tim, of which ones talked about building that relationship. We'll link back to some of those older ones and sessions. But if you've got any questions related to that or how you as a reliability professional deals with this issue of a recall, one, identifying it, and two, what do you do when your suppliers are involved? Let us know. We'd love to see what's on your mind or what questions you have. It's a great way for you to join the conversation, and we'd love to hear from you. So with that, Tim, let's see if we can spin this in a positive way and say, you know, in the spirit of the holidays, don't have a recall. No, it's not quite there.
No. Nothing ventured, nothing gained, right?
Yeah, that's right. I think there's risk all the way around in acknowledging that it exists and building a resilient supply chain. And
there you go.
In a cooperative supply chain. I think those are good pieces of advice. So let's leave it at that. And thanks, Tim. I appreciate getting back on the phone with you and recording another session.
It's always fun, Fred. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Tim. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.